Hello and welcome to a special live broadcast of Peck Report. This is our very first live Peck Report. So this is not Peck Underground Church. This is Peck Report. And the reason it's Peck Report is a couple days ago, I attempted to tell the story about how Israel may have discovered a cure for cancer. And it became very obvious very early on in that report that I don't know what I'm talking about. I can't pronounce half the words. I don't really understand all of it. And as I said in that video, we have got to bring Sharon Gilbert on because she's an expert in this field and she can explain it in a way that we can all understand. So we actually do have Sharon Gilbert. She hosts Sci Friday for Skywatch TV alongside her husband, Derek Gilbert. She's the author of the Red Wing Saga, a fantastic fiction series, though there's a lot of fact in there as well. And she's also the author of Ebola and the Fourth Horseman of the Apocalypse. Sharon, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having us on. First guests on your live show?
Yeah. This is the first time we've ever done a live Peck Report.
And it will be the last.
This is going to kill it. It's just going to ruin it.
It totally is.
Down in flames.
That's right. And I should introduce, we have Derek Gilbert as well. I think his role for today is mainly manning the mixer and playing tech guy. You're doing what I do in Skywatch. So where do we begin with this amazing story? Because it sounds groundbreaking. I mean, you always hear every couple of months or so that somebody found a new cure of cancer and there's some new remedy, maybe there's something to be said about some of that natural stuff. But this is totally different. This is actually something that's pretty groundbreaking, isn't it?
No, actually, it isn't.
Really?
It is not groundbreaking in the least.
Wow. Okay. So what is this all about?
It's based on phage display technology, and that's been around since 1989. In fact, the two inventors of it just won a Nobel Peace Prize in chemistry for it. This company out of Israel, I believe, are doing fundraising.
Oh, okay.
It's the man who announced the discovery is actually a hedge fund. In the past, he's been a hedge fund manager. He is the money guy. Mm-hmm. So he's looking for input of lots of cash. Here's interesting. CNBC sent him an email and he wrote back. They asked him, is this really a cure for cancer? Mind you, it is only based on a technology that's been around since 1989. So it's not groundbreaking. It's a way to test lots of antibodies very quickly. That's really what it is.
Oh, okay.
And if you can do that, then theoretically you can find antibody that may cure a specific type of, say, breast cancer. But they've only done tests in mice. Our FDA, and I assume Israel is similar to this, requires lots and lots and lots of testing in various animal forms, also in vitro, which means in a petri dish, and also in the live forms such as in mice, monkeys, rabbits. You know, there are a lot of animals that are used before they go to humans. And once you get in human trials, there are three phases of it. So this is very, very early days. That's, again, they're looking for infusion of cash. I understand that. It takes a lot of money to do research. But to say you've got a cure for cancer, CNBC wrote, do you have a cure for cancer? They wrote back, I can't even recall the guy's name, starts with an A. Don't see it in my notes. I'll find it in a minute. Anyway, he wrote back and he said, a solution, well, they acknowledged that the complete cure for cancer, meaning that we will have a complete solution ready for your first tryout in humans, a solution that's supposed to finish the problem without it coming back, even in the unlikely event that it does come back, it can be readministered or readjusted.
Oh, okay.
That's the money quote, because that's where you make your money. Even if you can effectively cure cancer in a cell, they're saying, if it comes back, you can pay us again, and we'll do it for you again. That's where pharmaceutical companies make their money. Now, cancer is a disease which has thousands of causes. So this would require thousands of cures.
Right.
They haven't even found the first antibody yet.
Oh, okay.
They have the process for doing it. They figured out a quick way to do it. I think the better story, and it's not making the rounds, is that there is a research group that is partnering with Cambridge, that's figured out a way to alter the Cas9 enzyme of CRISPR-Cas9. They've broken it up and reassembled it sort of like pop beads or, you know, little tinker toys. And they've come up with various formations of the enzyme. And if they use that, the reorganized Cas9 enzyme in the CRISPR-Cas9 assembly, it essentially turns into a watchdog, not a molecular scissors platform. The watchdog means that it's waiting for a specific protease to come along, and that protease, when it latches onto the Cas9 molecule, it will switch it on. Then the gene will be disrupted. In other words, a protease, which is a type of enzyme or a substrate in cell maturation and cell assembly when they're making proteins and things like that, a protease, specific protease, will be found in a specific cancer cell. So let's say it's protease ABC. If they're looking for a protease ABC, they will design a Cas9 molecule that only will activate when it sees protease ABC. If in that cancer cell, it sees it, it will switch it on, it'll turn off the gene that makes that assembly. In other words, it will stop it in its tracks. Another way to do this is the same sort of idea, CRISPR-Cas9, but instead it's waiting for a specific epigenetic factor to come along. And when that one comes along, it uses the assembly to switch off the gene rather than cut it. Assembly, and a third one, is that when this protease or this signaling molecule comes along, there's a signal within the CRISPR-Cas9 kit that says, okay, now we switch on the gene that causes self-destruction. It's a process called apoptosis. Cancer cells don't want to die. So not only do they consume the cells around them and use the guts of those cells to build new cancer cells, they refuse to die. In many cases, the telomerase gene is switched on. So this new assembly will fix that epigenetically. You're not hearing anything about that. It's all about this company that wants you to invest.
I hadn't heard about any of that either. Does that mean that there could actually be some good uses for gene editing? Because I was always under the impression that it's just all absolutely 100% evil.
Actually, something like this has the potential to work. Again, wow. Very specific. It would work on one very specific type of cancer. And that's assuming that the cancer cell doesn't figure out a way to beat it.
Right.
But let's assume it works. Cancer cells can proliferate again and again. So it's very possible in this treatment that would have to be administered multiple times for it to be effective.
Well, that makes sense. So it's not something that
it's a money maker. It would be a money maker too.
So this isn't something that involves then actually changing human DNA to make humans into something that's not human. And this you're talking about something that's totally different. This is specifically targeting cancerous cells, which aren't really. We shouldn't be having cancer anyway, right? So it's correcting. It's more corrective rather than trying to make something more than human. Is that right?
Absolutely right. It's corrective. Derek and I have been saying all along that CRISPR-Cas9 and other gene splicing and gene editing platforms that are out there, I am all for restoration.
Yes.
I'm all for correction. I'm all for healing. But augmentation, no. Changing the actual human condition? No, I don't think that is where we should go. But sadly, these techniques are going to be used to do that very thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I totally agree with you. And then in the restorative aspect. So this company then, because they've said, or at least they've hinted at, or maybe they worded it in a weird kind of way. But it seems like they said that they'll have a cure for cancer in a year. So isn't that only going to hurt their company when a year comes and they don't have anything?
Well, it will.
But by then, they'll be too rich to care.
Right.
it, it all hurt their company. The thing is that previously, this is where another company that did a similar thing. They had a big infusion of cash because they announced that they had a cure for a disruptive technology. That's the same phrase, by the way, but this Israeli announcement. It said we have a disruptive technology. There was a company called Theranos that said that they had a disruptive technology that would claimed that it was a streamlined process for lab blood analysis. They could perform 30 tests on a single drop of blood in a and get the results in the same day. I remember when this came out. This was in 2015 that they said this. 2014. 2 years later, in 2016. I need Jonathan Kahn to come in and teach me math. Yeah. In 2016, Theranos went from being a multi-billion dollar company to zero.
Wow.
Because it came out that they really didn't have the technology mm-hmm. they claimed to have.
They had a really good spokesperson, a young lady named Elizabeth Holmes, who kind of tried to emulate the vibe of Steve Jobs of
yes.
Apple. I mean, even down to the wearing black turtlenecks
yeah.
when she went yeah. to give presentations and stuff. But it turned out that it was all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, they even called their device the Edison machine to make it sound like it was really trendy. But the overhyping didn't last very long. And eventually the investors figured out that there was no there. They pulled out their money and the company took a dive. I think that if there is no there, this Israeli company is going to crash.
Yeah. And it sounds like it.
Well, the sad part of that, Josh, is that the scientists who are genuinely trying to help mankind as part of this company, they get sucked into that morass when someone who just wants to make money comes along and says, we've got startup capital, we'll give you this, and then from there we're going to announce what your results are to the world, and it's going to be great. We're going to give you all the money you need. And then suddenly there's no company, and the scientists are out of a job.
Mm. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Do you think there's ever going to be a cure for cancer, or would it have to be what we were talking about at the beginning? Would it have to be thousands upon thousands of cures for cancer? Do you think we're going to see a day?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer. The scientists would have to discover the commonality amongst those thousands of types of cancer, and so far they haven't. I think bottom line is, and you mentioned this earlier at the very beginning, the bottom line as far as cancer is concerned is to prevent it by eating well.
Right.
You can control a lot of things in your body if you put the appropriate nutrients into it.
That's a really good point, and that probably leads me to my final question. But for everybody that's viewing right now live, if you're on the chat, go ahead and put in a question if you have a question for Sharon or myself or Derek. But you know, it's not every day that we're able to get Sharon on. So if you have a question for her, now is the time. Put it in the chat, and if there are any questions, then we'll definitely talk about that. So my final question is. So a diet is obviously important. Are you aware of any in your research and you're looking into just human biology and all this stuff? There's a billion claims that there are natural cures for cancer, but I don't know how accurate all of that is. Do you think that there are any actual natural cures just besides just good diet? Is there any miracle cure out there? You know, apricot seeds or, you know, any of these things that people kind of put out there and say that this thing will cure your cancer?
No, none that I know of.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
same
again,
here.
It's all about prevention. What you can feel better if you have a disease. You can feel better if you appropriately, you know, nourish your body, and you can help. I have a sister who just went through breast cancer, and she had to go do the chemo and everything, and they tried several types of chemo, and one of them made her really, really sick. So I'm not a big fan of chemo. There's got to be a better way. So I think it's very likely that natural cures, natural treatments, and I would include in that definitely better nutrition, those are going to help your body to fight it. Because the bottom line is your immune system, God designed it to take care of these things. It's just that we have so hamstrung our immune system, we've hobbled ourselves by eating poorly. It's sort of like deciding, okay, well, you know, I don't have any gasoline or I can't really afford any for my car, so I'll just pour water in the tank.
Right. Yeah, I kind of lived like that for a while myself with my diet and everything. And then we actually have a cancer survivor in the chat, so that's great to see. Luther Brown saying,
congratulations to you.
Yeah, congratulate, praise God. He's a cancer survivor. He says he's doing the carnivore diet, meat, salt, and water. And that's what I did for a while too. I didn't have cancer or anything. I was just doing it to lose weight and get healthy. But it really works. I'm not sure if he's saying that had anything to do with him surviving cancer. He's just saying that he's doing that. But that's great. Somebody else is asking a question. We already kind of went through this one. But how does this cure work? DNA splicing? Wouldn't it be better not to mess with somebody's genetic structure? Just real quick, rock and roll. If you want, you can rewind. We did deal with that question. But basically,
gene editing can be good if it actually restores the original function of the gene, if it restores the original health of the cell. I'm all for that. I'm not for altering our DNA so that we change our species.
Right, exactly. So the Kristen Viking is saying, what does Sharon think about cannabis oil as medicine for cancer?
We know, I really haven't done any research on that, so it's likely that it may have some effect. There are natural ways to help improve the metabolic pathways within our bodies, and so that can help with cancer. So if it's a metabolite and that's how that's working, I honestly can't speak to it. But there is anecdotal evidence out there, which means that somebody says, I feel better.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the good thing, is the pain relieving qualities too.
Absolutely, because there are lots of conditions that are very painful. So I'm all for helping that. And if you can do it in a way that doesn't cause side effects in your body, then why not?
Yeah, I agree. Anything that we can do to limit suffering, and as long as it's not, you know, because there's a lot of people that say, oh, I got a headache and I need to smoke a joint. You know, I'm not buying it. And but if somebody like legitimately has, you know, something where they need it, then obviously that should be allowed to them. Luther Brown is saying, started on the diet, carnivore diet, January 6th, per instructions from Josh and Michaela Peterson videos, lost 12 pounds so far. That's awesome, Luther. Lawrence is asking, does Sharon know that we are being invaded and it's really against the law to sleep? I like how we destroy all the lives because they look bad. No clue what you're talking about, Lawrence.
I think that's a question for Jose Canseco.
Yeah, what is going on? I think somebody probably got into his Twitter, but that would be funny if it turns out it's actually him.
Well, Jose's kind of a weird dude. So,
is he? I don't know anything about him except there's some relation to baseball. That's all I know.
He's an identical twin. What's that tell you?
Yeah. He's been retired for a while, but he's still out in left field.
Ah.
See what he did there?
# dad jokes.
I told you the show.
Don't make me come back there.
He knows where I live.
Oh gosh.
Oh, well, this is great to see this. People are kind of in their own conversation about marijuana and stuff now in the chat room. I think they have long since forgotten about us, so that's fine. But it sounds like we were able to address everybody's questions. Before we wrap up, do you have any last thoughts? And also, where can people find everything that you guys do online? You do a lot. So give us all the links, all the internet things, all of it.
Well, probably the easiest way is to go to gilberthouse.org, gilberthouse.org. That's where we do our weekly Bible study. We post that. We're getting close to the end of the Old Testament, which means we will have gone through the entire Bible of the last 4.5 years. So we've got archives going all the way back to Genesis 1:1. Right now, we just finished the book of Zechariah. So we're getting close to the end of the Old Testament. So jump in now, and you'll have the whole Bible by the time we get through it. But Sharon's website, sharonkgilbert.com. And my website, DerekPGilbert.com. And from there, those three sites, you can find pretty much everything we do.
That's awesome. Sharon, tell us a little bit about your books for those who aren't familiar with them. What are they about? You got this whole Red Wing saga going. Why should people pick these up?
Well, you know what? I use fiction to teach. Derek writes nonfiction to teach. I write nonfiction too, but I prefer to write fiction. That's sort of how the Lord has wired me. I teach spiritual warfare, and a lot of the same things that Derek writes in his books are in mine, except mine is set in the 19th century. And I start with Jack the Ripper, and I show how, in my interpretation of it, it had a spiritual aspect to it and even connects to Mount Hermon.
That is awesome. So people should go check that out, the Red Wing Saga. We do got one more comment that I love this. Sean O'Vision is saying, is the competition still on? Who's more popular, Into the Multiverse or Sci Friday? I say multiverse. I might be a little bit biased, but.
We capitulated to Josh so long ago.
Yeah.
And what we plan on doing, we are working on a time machine. So as soon as we finish building that, Jose Canseco is helping us build it.
Yeah.
So as soon as it's done, we plan on going back in time and fixing all that.
Yeah.
Well, we will see, won't we? I'll just have to build my own time machine, or maybe I already have, and I've already unfixed it, and that's why.
Wait a minute. If we say Josh Peck, are we suddenly going to have you come back in time and make it so that we never said Josh Peck?
It's not the basilisk effect. It's the peckalisk effect. Roku's peckalisk.
I love it.
Say that 10 times fast.
You know, I will say, though, for Sci Friday, I technically do have more subscribers, but your episodes, per episode, you get more views than I do. You'll easily get 6, 7, 8, 10,000 views per episode. I get like 1 or 2,000. It's a bit of a draw at this point. Thank you for the comment, but it depends on if you're looking at total view count or if you're looking at subscribers. I'd say subscribers, but... Yeah.
Hey, we wanted to share something that just came up this past week, which is really exciting. Now, on Skywatch TV, of course, which we're happy to point everybody to skywatchtv.com, because that's where, you know, all of us
that's
are part of that ministry.
Is.
Right. This starting this week is a 4-week series with Pastor Carl Gallups, Tom Horn, and Shelley Neese. All three of them have new books out. Carl Gallups is an update on the story of Rabbi Kaduri, who was shown in a dream that the rabbi's name was Yeshua or Jesus. Tom's new book is about the rabbis. What is it called? The rabbis, Donald Trump, and the secret plan to build the third temple. Prophetic significance there. And Shelley Neese is the author of the Copper Scroll Project, and that is really intriguing because if you look up the Copper Scroll on the web, it comes across like something that's, you know, an internet myth that, you know, sometime 2,000 years ago, somebody hurriedly scribed something on a thin sheet of copper, rolled it up like a scroll, and hid it in a cave at Qumran among the Dead Sea Scrolls, but in a sealed room, like it was something special that needed to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out it's a real thing. It's in a museum in Amman, Jordan right now. And a retired arson investigator from Oklahoma named Jim Barfield, using his skills with pattern recognition and stuff, basically believes he's decoded what this scroll points to, which is perhaps the hidden treasures from the temple in Jerusalem that were moved out of Jerusalem before the Babylonian army of Nebuchadnezzar sacked the city. Well, come to find out that our tour to Israel in May overlaps a tour that Jim Barfield is part of in May, and he has agreed to take our tour on a tour of Qumran and show some of the locations where we may be walking on top of the greatest archaeological find in history, because we're talking tons of temple service utensils made of gold and silver. Now, bear in mind, this is in the West Bank, so there's some political ramifications here, because technically, according to the rest of the world, that belongs to the Palestinian Authority.
Right.
So, this could really be, but we're going to go.
We'll be perfectly safe.
Oh, yeah. It's nothing like that. The Israeli government administers it, again, you know, so it's secure. But if they start pulling out, you know, precious metal out of the soil there, obviously this will become a political football in a hurry. But, folks, if you want to come with us on the tour and see this, we still have room on the second bus. So for more information about joining us and seeing the possible location pointed to by the mysterious copper scroll, LipkinTours.com. That's LIPKIN, LipkinTours.com. And look for the Skywatch TV Wars of the Gods tour.
Awesome.
We only found out about this on Thursday of this week. So this is brand new. This is breaking news.
Wow, that's great. Well, I highly suggest everybody go there. If you want to go, go sign up now. I'm sure that's going to fill up fast. And check out those programs on Skywatch TV. They are fantastic. I've already seen them. But I can tell everybody they're mind-blowing stuff. And if you're interested in that topic, next week, We're actually going to have Carl Gallups and Zev Peratt to talk about that on February 9th. And then February 16th, we're going to have Shelly Neese and Jim Barfield on both on Peck Underground Church Live. You'll be able to ask your questions. It's an amazing story, and your minds are going to be blown. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Well, guys, and this has been – oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say Shelly Neese was on my podcast 2 weeks ago, VFTB.net, View from the Bunker. So if you want to check out, get a preview for what you'll see on Josh's program. It's audio only, but you'll get an idea of what the conversation will be like. It's fascinating stuff.
Definitely. VFTB.net. Everybody should go check that out. Easily one of the best podcasts in the world, View from the Bunker. That's kind of how I started off even learning about you guys before coming and working here and meeting all of you and everything. And I used to listen to View from the Bunker all the time. So that's awesome. All right. Well, I think that's it. This has been a lot of fun, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this, especially on a weekend morning. You know, I appreciate it.
Happy to do it. Thank you for asking us.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have to have you back on again sometime. One of these days we'll do a whole Peck Underground Church thing and we can just talk about, well, we got so much to talk about. We usually fill our mornings with good discussion. So, but thank you again, guys. Everybody in the chat, make sure you check out all of their online outlets. Go watch Sci Friday. You're gonna love it. It's a fantastic show. Go check out all their stuff. They gave all the links. All right, everybody. Love you all. This has been our very first live Peck Report. Until next time, take care. God bless.